I'm Carson Stooley. With me is Fangraphs Managing Editor Dave Cameron, and this is the Pitch Talks Blue Jays Podcast. Dave Cameron, this is the Pitch Talks Blue Jays Podcast, and this is episode 12. Episode 12 of the Pitch Talks Blue Jays Podcast. Hello, Dave Cameron. How are you?
I'm good, Carson. How are you?
Very good. I am Carson Stooley. As noted, you are Dave Cameron, Managing Editor of Fangraphs, and this is, as I say, the Pitch Talk Blue Jays Podcast, where each week we attempt to apply objective and dispassionate analysis to the Toronto Blue Jays.
Yeah, attempt is probably the best word there.
Attempt, right, that's right. And, of course, our patron is Homestand, not Homeland, homestandsports.com, noted for, among other reasons, for facilitating the Pitch Talks events. Dave Cameron, would you please provide a succinct characterization of a Pitch Talks event?
It is a gathering of fans, Pitch Talks being baseball, but there's also Puck Talks and other talks, other sports, Hoop Talks, I think. It's a gathering of fans about a sport, Pitch Talks being the baseball sport that we all like, where we get together or people get together and have panel discussions, have conversations with players, writers, executives, broadcasters, people from all areas of baseball, to weigh in on the local team and baseball at large and have interesting conversations with adult beverages.
Right. Okay. And like many people, I'm sure Kevin Kennedy and Homestand Sports will be taking much of July off. However, Pitch Talks events return in August, early August, Monday, August 7th, Tuesday, August 8th. Monday, August 7th, at the Bell House in Brooklyn, New York, the borough of Brooklyn, in the city of New York, the state of New York, at the Bell House. Ben Lindbergh, author of The Only Rule Is You Have to Go Do a Good Job.
The Only Rule Is It Has to Work.
The Only Rule Is It Has to Work. Ben Lindbergh, also of The Ringer, of course. And Jeff Sullivan of Fangraphs.com. They will record a live edition of Effectively Wild, which is a Fangraphs baseball podcast.
It is.
Yeah, so that's promising. There will be, I won't belabor the description of them, but there will be a Tackle Talks in Seattle in August, which is a football-related one. There will be a live recording of Puck Soup, which is a hockey podcast in September. And then I'll mention one other baseball-related event, which is Pitch Talks San Francisco. That's Monday, September 18th, 7 p.m. Monday, September 18th, 7 p.m. And that will include, among others, Grant Evans, who's the...
Grant Bisbee.
Grant Bisbee is a...
Brisby.
Right, but Grant Evans together, that's Grant Brisby and Bobby Evans, who's the San Francisco Giants GM. Grant Brisby, of course, is the editor of McCovey Chronicles, an SB Nation blog for the San Francisco Giants. And Eno Saris will also be there.
Don't let that stop you, though. Go anyway.
Strangely coiffed and usually intoxicated Eno Saris will be there as well. Okay, so that is it. That is Pitch Talks, our patron. Tickets are always, of course, available, not at homelandsports.com, which is a patriotic sports website, but homestandsports.com. Okay, Dave Cameron, now let us move on to some objective, in this case, dispassionate, disappointing analysis, I suppose, of the Toronto Blue Jays, a team whom, when we left them last week, appeared to be, as they have a couple times, on the verge of reaching 500 and on the verge of, I guess, making good on the sort of preseason projections that we had published at Fangraphs.com improving, getting closer to the top of the division. That has not been the case. Allow me to inform you, Dave Cameron, that since we last spoke last Monday, the Toronto Blue Jays have played 6 games and lost 5 of them. They are 1-5. They were 1-5. Capped by a loss to the Red Sox yesterday, score of 15-1.
Right, they got blown out.
Yeah, could you just first say what happened in that game? It looks like it was started by Joe Biagini, and I guess like vaguely some of his. I mean, he still struck out 7 guys, which is pretty good. But I don't know. Is there nothing more to provide in the way of commentary other than? He got hit hard.
Yeah, I think the thing early in the season, like Biagini is basically a pitch to contact pitcher. He's not really a real strikeout guy. He's kind of in the Aaron Sanchez mode, where he throws down in the zone, tries to get ground balls and avoid walks. And early in the year, Biagini did a very good job of limiting hard contact, and ran a very low batting average on balls in play. Wasn't giving up home runs. That has turned, and yesterday he got battered. Mookie Betts had 8 RBIs out of the leadoff spot, which I think hasn't happened in baseball in 100 years. Joe Biagini starting to get hit. Living in the weak contact game is a challenging one.
Let me ask you this. Okay, so in 5.1 innings precisely, Joe Biagini faced 28 batters. Now, against those 28 batters, he walked 2 of them, and he allowed 10 hits. So that's 12 guys reaching base, right?
Yeah, that's bad.
And 2 of those 10 hits were home runs. So none of this is good, right? So you say that's bad, and that obviously contributed to the poor result. On the other hand, he only walked 2 of 28 guys, which is a pretty good rate, right? And he also struck out 7. So he struck out a quarter of the batters he faced.
Right.
Now, the average, if you were to go through and you just to look at all of the pitchers right now who've, you know, recorded strikeout rates between, like, you know, 22 and 28% or something like that, that'd probably be a pretty good collection of pitchers.
It would be, yeah.
So is your takeaway from a single start like that, is it, oh, this was awful, or was it, oh, this remains promising for Joe Biagini?
I mean, it could be both, right? Like, you could have an awful performance that has promising indicators for future performances.
Mm-hmm.
I think what we can generally say is that, like, in general, walks and strikeouts are most of what a pitcher can control. And, you know, hits and home runs are sometimes variable. And, you know, you can throw a pitch that's in the low outside corner and someone can just hit it over the fence. And there's nothing you can really do about that. Or they can hit a line drive that your guy doesn't get to. It's not necessarily your fault. I do think that sometimes, especially on a single game indicator, you want to be careful of saying, oh, he just got unlucky, because perhaps Joe Biagini got 7 strikeouts because he was pounding the strike zone, which also might be why he gave up 10 hits. So he could have just been poorly placing balls in a way that allowed him to get ahead in the count in order to get strikeouts, mm-hmm. but then also allowed the Red Sox batters to tee off against him.
So you're saying that you would not be surprised if you found that Joe Biagini had recorded a higher than average zone percentage during that particular game.
I would not be surprised to find that.
You would not be surprised, right. And that's just essentially the rate of pitches that fall within what the PitchFX or StatCast designated zone.
Right? That's right. You can always, you can actually look this up.
Yeah, but it's fine. It doesn't need to be. It doesn't.
What do you think Joe Biagini's zone percentage was yesterday?
Well, could you give me what league average is?
With a few more clicks, yes. I can tell you Joe Biagini's average for the season.
I want two different averages. Okay. The averages I want are as follows. I would like Joe Biagini's season average.
47%.
47%. And I would also like the league average.
Just for starting pitchers or for all pitchers?
For starting pitchers, yeah.
Also 47%.
Okay. So I would guess that Joe Biagini's zone percentage was in the neighborhood of 55%.
51.
Okay.
So not dramatically higher than average, but a little higher.
What do you think a standard deviation is?
Looking at his game log, probably like 8%, 9%, something like that.
Okay, so within a
season. He had it on June 16th against the White Sox. Joe Biagini's zone percentage, 18%.
Huh. What was his performance in the game? Can you tell?
Let's click on the box score.
Yeah, this is
this is thrilling podcasting right here.
Mindless entertainment, but it's actually it's an interesting line of inquiry. Yeah.
So in the game where Joe Biagini had an 18% zone percentage, he pitched 1 inning and gave up 8 hits.
Oh, okay, so not great. Yeah.
He also walked a batter, gave up 6 runs, and was pulled.
I think probably the most miraculous thing is that he was able to allow so many hits.
Right. I guess he just like fell behind, grooved one. That's probably
that might be the pattern there. Huh. Yeah. That's very interesting. Yeah. I feel like there are some pitchers who excel despite the fact that they have low zone percentage. Like, isn't Dallas Keuchel that sort of pitcher? For
you don't have to be in the strike zone if you can get guys to swing at it.
And I think that Francisco Liriano, if I'm not mistaken, brought this to extremes at certain points during his Pirates career.
Correct.
But I mean, don't batters catch on at some point?
Right. If you're never in the strike zone, they will start just taking all the time. But if you have, you know, a really good slider or changeup, as Liriano did previously, less so now, but when he had, like, really top-shelf stuff, he didn't have to throw strikes because hitters couldn't tell that his slider and changeup were not strikes.
Right. And I suppose that's sort of the thing, isn't it? If you have a pitch, if you have, in particular, an excellent breaking pitch, that appears to that looks as though it will end up in the zone, but then goes out of the zone and induces swings. Then that's the a way to have success against major league batters.
That's right.
Now, in terms of looking for explanations for the team's poor week, again, this may not have necessarily predictive measures, but it will have explanatory ones. We find that there are two ways we can measure this by pitching. One of them is wins above replacement, the sort of standard one we carry at Fangraphs, which is measured by fielding independent pitching. So that's strikeouts, walks, and home runs allowed. The Blue Jays actually did fine at that. They finished, I think, 12th in the major leagues last week. Allow me to check. 13th is the answer with one win. But in terms of the other wins above replacement, which is calculated by runs allowed per nine innings, they were 19th. So here we have a bit of a gap between their fielding independent and runs allowed outcomes. Okay, but still, I would say not enough to sink them. However, if we move over to the offensive side of things, we find that the Blue Jays produced the single lowest wins above replacement mark among all major league teams over the last 7 days.
Right. They didn't hit at all.
Less than a win, yeah, right. Which is problematic, and I suppose if we look for the answers why, we find that it's not surprisingly a number of the players in the team produce negative figures. In fact, it's easier to say which players produce positive ones. That was limited simply to Justin Smoak, All-Star Justin Smoak.
Yep.
And I believe All-Star starter for the American League, isn't that right?
I believe that's correct, yeah.
Yeah, and Steve Pierce were the only ones above average. Kevin Pillar, Josh Donaldson, Ezekiel Carrera, and Kendrys Morales all -2 or worse, -0.2 or worse. So looking for, I mean, obviously we've mentioned this times. The team appears to need Josh Donaldson to be performing well in order for the offense to work. Typically,
yeah. Yep.
He hasn't
been good since he came off the DL.
Right, and his injury was, it was a heel or something like this?
Yeah, he's had, like, lower leg problems, basically dating back to last year. Lower body.
Now, I know Jeff Zimmerman at Fangraphs/Rotographs, he does a lot of work on this, cataloging various type of ailments, DL stints, and then looking at performances when players return from those.
Yeah.
And for example, I think the one study I've seen him write is hamate injuries, right?
Right.
That's a thing in your hand. I think maybe when guys come back from hamate injuries, they tend to exhibit less power, maybe for a time period, because that swing's not working. I think also, I don't know if it's anecdotal or if it's been borne out in research. When pitchers return from Tommy John, it's usually not velocity that suffers as much as command. Isn't that right?
Yeah, that's been shown, I think.
That's been shown, okay. Do we have any sense of what might suffer from lower body, foot injury, that sort of thing?
Yeah, that's also power. So, like, you know, but most of your power comes from quickly rotating your body. You're not going to get as much power from your arms as you are from your legs. And so if Donaldson is not 100%, which it seems like he's probably not, then he won't be able to generate as much authority, and when he hits the ball, it just won't go as far, and that's basically what we've seen from him so far since coming back from the disabled list. Like, he had a .269 batting average on balls in play in June, when he's normally one of these guys who hits the ever-living crap out of the baseball and runs, you know, 300 last year, 315 the year before that. So even though he's a slower player, Donaldson usually runs higher batting average balls in play. Most likely, Donaldson's just not hitting the ball as hard.
Right. We will say, I suppose, as I say, one silver lining is Justin Smoak has been recognized by the fans as an All-Star. He would have gotten in on the fan vote. Do you think that essentially his selection to play first base for the American League is warranted?
It's warranted in the sense that, like, the other better first basemen in the American League aren't having good years. So,
right, okay.
Like, Miguel Cabrera is a better player than, you know, I think most people would be like, oh, who's the best first baseman in the American League? It's Miguel Cabrera. Mm-hmm. But Miguel Cabrera has been injured himself and is struggling a bit. And so based on just 2017 performance, you could say Justin Smoak, Yonder Alonso, Logan Morrison, three surprising busted prospects who are coming up on 30 and, you know, have not lived up to their prime. All of them have decided to have a breakout year this year. And Smoak maybe he's there with Lomo. I don't know if he's having a better year than Lomo, but you know, worthy of starting at, or as worthy of starting as Morrison or Alonso.
Now, obviously, the Blue Jays have seen the Tampa Bay Rays a couple times already this year. Not surprising, they're both in the same division. Just in the same way that Justin Smoke's sudden success seems surprising, and I guess has been characterized mostly by an improvement in contact, do you have a sense of what's doing it for Logan Morrison?
So I think for all these guys that we just named and a lot of the guys in baseball, you're like, man, why is he suddenly good? It's the baseball. It's like Logan Morrison has been an underpowered first baseman for most of his career. Came up as a guy who, you know, was like a doubles guy and, oh, those doubles are going to turn into home runs. I think his rookie year, he had 20 doubles and 2 home runs. And it was like, man, as soon as you get that distribution to a little more normal where it's the doubles and homers are closer, this guy's going to be a superstar. And then like they just never really got all that close together. This year, Logan Morrison has 14 doubles and 24 home runs. So those doubles have turned into home runs, and fly ball outs have turned into home runs. And guys like Morrison, who, you know, are moderate power guys who would hit long fly balls that would get caught at the warning track, they are benefiting from the fact that the ball is now going 10 feet further.
Right. Okay. So that's a big part of it. So I think that that is the sort of week in review. In terms of playoff odds, I can tell you now that in terms of winning the division, we have them just above 2%, the Blue Jays, which is a pretty large departure from where they were at the beginning of the year. Chance of making the wild card game just under 16%. So overall, less than 20% chance of making a sort of postseason series/game of any description.
Yeah, and the, you know, what, 95% of their playoff odds now are the chance to get into a one-game playoff,
right.
Which, you know, anything can happen, but generally you think about one single-game play-ins as being decided to some degree by the quantity of or quality of your number one starter who you hope can pitch that game, and also number of quality bullpen arms you can throw, because in a single game playoff you shouldn't necessarily let your starter go 7 innings. So you want a guy who can throw like 5 or 6 shutdown innings and then have like 4 or 5 relievers that you can shut the door with. I don't think the Blue Jays have a play-in game caliber starter right now. I think Marcus Stroman's probably their best pitcher, but if you're going up against say the Indians, if they don't win the division, they've got Corey Kluber. You're at a disadvantage there. If you're going up against the Red Sox, if they don't win the division, they've got Chris Sale. If you're going up against the Yankees, you know, Luis Severino is at least pitching like a guy who could be that ace, and then they might also make a trade for, you know, a really good pitcher. So I think in each of those situations, you would say that the Blue Jays would go in at a disadvantage.
Right. Yeah, so it's a tough road. So if the sell-off, if some sort of sell-off were to occur, when would it occur?
I mean, they're going to wait till the last minute. Like, the Blue Jays aren't going to sell in early July, and it will depend on what they do over the next few weeks. But as we'll talk about in your schedule portion of the show, they've got the Yankees and Astros coming up this week. That is not an easy schedule to run through. And so if they struggle this week and go into the All-Star break, you know, even down at 15 or 10% playoff odds, they'll probably start laying the groundwork for what a sell-off would look like. They're definitely going to wait until, you know, July 29th or something. But I would imagine they would need, like, you know, the guys that they would trade, they would need them to start performing better anyway.
Right. Now, this is before we get to the schedule portion of the show, Dave Cameron. Of course, we do we do a prospect update.
Yeah.
Portion of the show, which in recent weeks, and this trend will continue today, has actually just become the Danny Jansen prospect update portion of the show.
All right, I'm excited Danny to talk Jansen about him again.
Danny Jansen is a catcher in the Blue Jays system, of course, who has a promising offensive profile, very promising. He's hitting quite well in Double A Eastern League after hitting quite well in High A. And he has been named but of course the challenges with Jansen are his defense. What I would like to announce right now as part of this Danny Jansen prospect update is that Danny Jansen has been named to the Eastern League All-Star team for the, I don't know. The
so you don't care about the Major League All-Star game, but you do care about the Eastern League All-Star game.
Right. I should mention that we just before this have recorded an episode of Fangraphs Audio during which you were bullying me into talking about the Major League All-Star game, in which I expressed very little interest in it, and even maybe expressed little interest in the futures game.
That's right. Where the actual good prospects are, you're like, eh.
That's right. But
Vlad Guerrero and Bo Bichette, not interested. Danny Jansen, I'm in.
That's right. Danny Jansen will be participating in this game, and I'd say probably a good opportunity to see what he does in the way of receiving, because he'll be facing the cream of the AA crop, except for the players who are playing the Futures game because they're too good to play in the
So AA kind of the expired cream, the cream that sat on the counter for a little while.
Churning. Yeah. It's churning. It's fine. So you asked me, Dave Cameron, would I watch the Major League All-Star game? I said no. You asked me, would I watch the Futures game? I said sure. I said fine. Will I watch the AA Eastern League All-Star game? Absolutely. Absolutely. That is to occur maybe the 11th, I'm going to say. I'm going to say it's going to be the 11th.
Okay.
Of July.
I would imagine that the AA All-Star game will be more enjoyable to watch than most of the last few Blue Jays games.
Yeah, that's also quite possible. The All-Star Classic is actually July 12th. Not January at all. July 12th is the date of that. Okay, very good. That has been the Danny Jansen status update portion of the program. Now let's move on to the week ahead. The week ahead, as you note, Dave Cameron, is a dangerous one. It's a vexing one for the Toronto Blue Jays. It includes the New York Yankees and the Houston Astros. I believe I'm not telling tales out of school, Dave Cameron, I say that those Houston Astros currently possess the best record in the American League.
Yep, that's true.
Does that sound familiar to you?
Yeah.
And I have another item to report about that team, which is that they do not actually have the best, essentially platonic record. That sort of best platonic record actually belongs to the New York Yankees. I'm talking about base runs, of course.
Right. Context independent.
Context independent, right. So in terms of, this is where you take out the... No, actually, I've lied again. The Astros do have the best one of those as well. But the Yankees are second. So essentially, they're facing the... If you look at the performances today, you strip out sequencing. These are essentially the two best teams in the American League whom they'll be facing.
Right. I mean, you could argue that like some of the Yankees' base run success has come from players who are playing over their heads. Like Starlin Castro is not as good as he has been to this point, and Luis Severino is not as good as he's been to this point. So the Yankees might not actually be the second best team in the American League, but they have played like a very good team to this point.
Right. Okay. They will be visiting the New York Yankees. Every one of those games offers an expected win percentage below 50%. First game, Marcus Stroman, who has pitched quite well, actually. He was sort of the lone bright spot over the course of last week, versus Masahiro Tanaka, who, it should be noted, Tanaka, his ERA is not what it has been in recent years, but his fielding independent numbers are almost precisely the same.
Well, he's had a home run problem lately, right?
Right, okay, yeah. So his expected fielding independent numbers have been precisely the same. Roughly the same difference between the strikeouts and walks. That tends to be somewhat predictive. Now, Dave Cameron, here's a question. We recently began hosting pitch tracking data, courtesy Pitch Info, which is essentially the pitch effects or Statcast data that has then been looked over. Why don't you explain it?
So Harry Pavlidis and his team over at Pitch Info, which was started as a consulting group when PitchFX was kind of formed or became public, to clean up and correct some of the data and provide better pitch classifications. So like the Major League Baseball, if you ever watch on the game day on the MLB at Bat app, sometimes it'll say like, especially if a position player is pitching, he'll throw like a, you know, what is for him a fastball, but it's like 77 miles an hour. The game day app will be like, that was a knuckleball.
Yeah, a lot of knuckleballs classified.
Like, because it doesn't know. And so, like, algorithms are can do good in aggregate, but like maybe less well in specificity. Mm-hmm. And so Harry and his team look at all the data every single night and kind of know the pitcher's repertoires and say, oh, yeah, that guy doesn't throw a knuckleball or that guy doesn't throw a curveball. And they adjust for radar readings that might not be correct in some stadiums. They throw out bad data when they find it. So they essentially clean the data that comes out of StatCast.
Right. Now, and according to that data, Masahiro Tanaka is throwing his fastball nearly 1.5 miles faster than he did last year, and he's recorded a career-high rate right now. I believe at the beginning of last year for Tanaka, and that actually ended up being probably his best year as a major leaguer, There was some concern about his fastball velocity. Of course, it didn't seem to make a difference. He's throwing harder now, though, and he's also allowing more runs than he had. Is there any correlation between those two, or is that preposterous?
It's probably
well,
not.
Well, there is correlation.
It's probably not correlation. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, the reality is he was pitching with a reduced velocity last year because he was also pitching through a UCL strain. So, like, he could have had Tommy John surgery, but he elected to pitch through it. Most likely that has improved to some degree. Yervin Santana is another guy who's done this where he's pitched through what could have been surgically repaired and then gotten better over time. So most likely Tanaka's elbow has strengthened and he doesn't need surgery anymore, which is why his velocity's up. It's unlikely that strengthening elbow is why he's giving up home runs. It's more likely just because everybody's hitting home runs now.
Okay, all right. So the point is that if one goes into the game expecting Tanaka to allow runs 25% worse than the league average, and he ends up pitching a gem, it will not be surprising on those grounds. The next game is Jay Happ versus CC Sabathia. What sort of season is Sabathia having? I feel as though, I mean, he's not the ace of that team, and he's a kind of a different pitcher now than he was however many years ago.
Yeah, Sabathia used to throw 100 miles an hour, and is very different than he was in his younger days. Now he sits in the high 80s and lives off a changeup, and he has tried to become a contact manager, so he doesn't strike guys out much anymore, but he also doesn't give up hard contact. So he's essentially living on the edges of the zone, and he's become a junk baller, essentially. Like, CC Sabathia is a overweight Marco Estrada.
Okay, which is not necessarily what you would have predicted if you'd seen him a few years ago, but a lot of innings on his name. And then Marco Estrada, the same Marco Estrada, versus Michael Pineda. Of course, I think the Blue Jays faced Michael Pineda in the not very distant past. Still having trouble with contact management, still striking people out?
Yeah, that's Pineda's deal. So he throws hard, he has a good slider, he gets people to swing and miss. You're like, man, this guy could be great. And then he throws fastballs down the middle and people crush them, and you're like, this guy's not great.
Okay, and then then they will play Houston at home. The first the game will be is difficult. Francisco Liriano versus Lance McCullers. McCullers, I think, on a per batter per inning basis, is one of the best. Has recorded some of the best numbers in the majors, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's a ground ball machine who also strikes everybody out, which is a good combination. Yeah. He does have his walk issues. He doesn't pitch deep into games. The Astros rely very heavily on their bullpen, so you probably only see McCullers for five innings. But for those five innings, you're probably not going to hit the ball in the air.
Speaking of that bullpen, I will not be invoking his name here as a starter, but Chris Devensky might actually be the best pitcher on the entire team.
But Lance McCullers is the best pitcher on the team.
Lance McCullers is the best. In terms of his performance on a per-batter basis, Chris Devensky might have been the most successful thus far.
Sure, because pitching in relief is easier.
Have I contorted the truth enough to make that statement somewhat accurate? Okay. And then Francis Martez is who they'll face second while pitching Joe Biagini. Francis Martez was, I think, recently promoted, has maybe bounced between possible future starting and relief role, like many hard-throwing young players, I guess.
Yep.
Walks batters, et cetera. Perhaps a chance to capitalize there. Mike Fiers. What's Mike Fiers doing this? Is he still... I think of him and Marco Estrada as this sort of same category of pitcher.
Yeah, high fastballs, high 80s, gives up home runs when he's not spotting the ball, but gets swings and misses at the top of the strike zone. He'd been kicked out of the rotation earlier in the year, but injuries have led him back to the rotation, and for the last month he's actually been pretty good.
Okay, and then finally, Brad Peacock. The Blue Jays will end the first half of the year by throwing Jay Happ versus Brad Peacock, who has had a strange and... a beneficial transformation and is succeeding in starting rotation.
Yeah, I think we mentioned the Effectively Wild podcast at the beginning. If you were to describe anyone in baseball as Effectively Wild right now, it would have to be Brad Peacock, who I think his last start, he threw five shutout innings where he walked six and struck out seven.
Okay.
That's unusual. Usually you don't pitch well when you're walking more than a batter per inning.
Now, you hear sometimes pitchers say if they were starters and were not having as much success as a starter, then they moved to the bullpen and they started throwing harder because they don't have to throw for as many innings, they don't have to throw as many pitches. And then when they move back to the rotation, they attempt something clicks. This is not every pitcher, obviously, but for some of them, something clicks and they say, I have to bring that same sort of intensity to my starting, to my starts.
Right.
Peacock really seems to have essentially just taken – a reliever's mentality to the starting rotation.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is one of the areas where the Astros relying heavily on their bullpen helps him, because he's not out there thinking, like, how do I get to the seventh inning? How do I get to the eighth inning? How do I throw? Like, Brad Peacock will probably never throw a complete game. It's just, mm-hmm. like, he would, his arm would fall off before the ninth inning started. So if Brad Peacock's thinking, like, okay, I was a long reliever who would throw 3 to 4 innings at a time and try and get as many people out, he's not really doing anything all that different as a starter. He generally goes 4 or 5 innings, or sometimes 3. He throws his 85 pitches, he strikes everybody out, he walks some guys, he doesn't go up that many runs, and he gets out of there. And then they bring in Devensky or Will Harris or their other legion of relievers they have, and they win the game. And so
he's a long reliever who starts games.
That's basically, the Astros are basically treating their starters as long relievers, yeah.
And is it, should we be not surprised by this, given how they tend to handle the pitchers at the minor league level, which is by piggybacking everyone, so essentially having 2 starters scheduled for every start?
Yeah, I mean, this is something that has been talked about in baseball for a while as, like, a coming trend of, like, you know, we know that batters do better the more often they face a pitcher within the same game. We know that pitchers do worse the more often, more pitches they throw. These things lead you to more frequent pitching changes if you can handle it. So you can't really do this every start all season long. I mean, the Astros had, you know, a healthy Dallas Keuchel eating innings. Charlie Morton was eating some innings. So you can't do this with every guy. But guys like Peacock, you can basically say, look, you know, you can be effective for 4 innings. You're not going to be good if you're going to be asked to pitch 6 or 7. We're not going to ask you to pitch 6 or 7. And you can get better performance out of multiple guys throughout a game if you're willing to tax your bullpen a little bit.
Okay. With that, Dave Cameron, I believe we have come to the end of this episode of the Pitch Talk Blue Jays podcast.
Hooray for us.
Yeah, hooray for us. Well, thank you very much for participating, Dave Cameron.
You're welcome.
All right, that has been Dave Cameron. He's the managing editor of Fangraphs. I'm Carson Sestouli, and this has been the Pitch Talks Blue Jays podcast.